Today's episode of Daily DVR dives into Veronica Mars is sponsored by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Go to Cufflinks.com now and use code DVR20 to save 20% off your order, no minimum. That's right, the whole shebang, baby. DVR20, use it. You need a belt, you need cufflinks, you need ties, you need like a pocket square. Come on, look good. Elevate your style when you walk out the door in the morning. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. They have everything you need, and they got a great blog over there too that'll help you if you have an event coming up. So go over to cufflinks.com/DVR today. Welcome back to Daily DVR Does Veronica Mars. My name is Axel. And of course, my co-host is the wonderful and amazing Ken. And you can find out more about us at DVRpodcast.com. I'm covering Bachelor in Paradise with Sarah and Mindhunter with Heath. Check those out. We're having a lot of fun doing that. You can also consider supporting us and becoming a patron at patreon.com/DVR. Today, we're going to be talking about Veronica Mars Season 4, Gods of War. So let's get right to it. I love this episode. I know you did too, Ken. You told me you watched it 4 times.
I did. I watched it 4 times. Is it episode 6 or is it?
Oh, episode 7.
It is.
Okay. Wait. Okay. Let me redo that part. Then everyone will tune in and be like, oh, wrong episode, and have to go back. I don't want to make them have to do that because that's what I do. Okay. Today we'll be talking about Veronica Mars Season 4, Episode 7, Gods of War. Ken, you saw it 4 times. How you doing today?
I did see. I probably could have watched it 4 more times. It was that good of an episode, and I'm great. I'm psyched to talk about Veronica Mars. I'm particularly psyched to talk about this episode, and I can't think of a better person to do it with than you.
Oh, thanks, pal. I agree. Right back at you. Yeah, this was... You know, this season is really fantastic. I'm really getting into it. And even though the way that we're watching it, where we didn't binge, and yeah. When we say we're going to do an episode, I watch the episode and I'm enjoying it so much. And I'm instantaneously going right back into it. I'm not forgetting anything. I'm not losing a beat because, again, they're doing such a great job of reminding you of the plot, reminding you of the mystery of the characters. They're not forcing, they're letting a character go away for a little while and come back, and then they remind you who they are. And I just think that they've done a wonderful job. I love this episode. We left off last episode where we saw Maloof getting shot by one of the brothers, one of the white trash brothers, I guess we can call them. And now we pick up and we're not getting, again, they're doing this again too, which I really like. They're not going right back into it. They did this when we saw the brothers in the desert.
Yeah.
Right. They don't go right back into it. We open differently.
Yeah. It's like Diane and Rob are simultaneously not spoon feeding us, but at the same time doing very economical linear storytelling. And they've done a great balancing act between those two things all season long. Yes, yeah, you're right.
Great. But what we do get is we're opening up with Veronica and Keith at the sheriff's office. They're explaining the connection between the cartel guys, the brothers, the Maloofs. Again, kind of doing a bit of, what do they call it, laying out the plot, you know, explaining here. But it doesn't come off that way because there's such great acting, and the chief, too, just doesn't care.
Right. Right. She doesn't care. And we get the Easter egg. I call it an Easter egg. It's like that's the only thing I can think to call it, but it's not an Easter egg. But we kind of get that extra level of the phone call from the mother of the kid that Alonzo and Jody chopped his head off, like, because that's who the nerds fingered, remember?
Yeah,
they're like, yeah, our competitor is the one who did it because he was so jealous of us, and so he was their first kill when they came to town. They killed a kid, and that was his mother calling the sheriff saying, are you ever going to get to the bottom of this, like, blah 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 blah. So it was great also in that tight scene to also get like a follow-up on the dead kid.
Yeah, that was good too. They keep on doing that, bringing us back. And I like what they're doing with the Chief. She is just who she is. She's not becoming, I mean, a little bit later in this episode, she has her reasons for doing what she's doing, maybe siding with them, but yeah. She's maintaining her aloofness. And I like that because it, you know, they're not taking any easy way out this season. And then like all of a sudden having her do something crazy. And I think in the past, when they were on not a streaming service, when this was 20 something episodes, they would have taken her in some weird direction, right? And maybe it would have been fun, but I like the idea that she just is who she is.
I feel like to a larger extent, they're doing the same thing with Veronica. This is how you write for a female. You just treat them like a human being. And so Chief of Police Marsha Langdon is who she is, just like you said. She's ambitious, she's complicated, she's unsympathetic because of her ambition, but she's also competent and smart, and she's also driven and motivated. Sometimes she's motivated by the wrong things, but she's not an idiot like the Lamb brothers. So she's like a fully three-dimensional, complicated human being who happens to be a woman.
Yeah.
And it's great.
True that. Well, now we move into a scene that I found interesting. Veronica's at home. She gets a call from Logan on FaceTime. And very scantily clad as well, in the bra, looking good. She is so gorgeous.
She is.
May I say, too, don't you think that I feel like later in this episode we get another intense sex scene?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like that this is coming from the actress. I feel like it's that I don't feel like, okay, we're on a streaming service, we're going to make Veronica naked more.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like I'm older. She is a mother too, right? She has a couple kids in real life. Yeah. And I feel like she's kind of like Veronica is a sexual being, you know, that's part of who she is. So this is going to be in the, it just feels very natural to me. And I have to also say that, she's also, Kristen Bell is pulling it off. Like she is just, it's a kind of a sexualness to Veronica that I can't say that I'm entirely used to, but I'm not against either.
I agree with you. And I think it's an extension of seasons 1 through 3 because she always had a boyfriend.
Yeah.
She was always making out in the backseat of a car, or later on when she lost her virginity. There were many scenes where she was at the hotel with Duncan post-sex, sometimes laying in bed with him. So Veronica has a history of having a sexual life and a very predominant physical sexual life. And now that she's an adult, you're absolutely right. They've sort of extended it.
Yeah.
But I kind of think it's wonderful that there's a female character who's always sort of embraced to one extent or another her sexuality, despite her negative, complicated history with sexuality.
Yeah, which is a great point. Exactly. She still, whatever has happened to her, she is still herself, and she worked through it, and she's able to still indulge and have fun and express herself and be natural. And in this case, they use it interestingly because she's like showing more to us, the audience, than she is to Logan. Like she quickly grabs her shirt. She puts her on, right? But when we see her, she's bent over. You know what I mean? She's showing it to us. And then it's almost like, oh, my could be fiance, I better cover up. What? You know what I mean? You'd think like this guy's, you know, thousands of miles away. He wants to see that, right? So this scene plays out like that too, because she kind of keeps on avoiding talking to him.
Right. She's creating even more literal barriers between herself and him by adding articles of clothing And so it's not just a metaphor. It's not just subtext. It's text. But it's a smart choice to include a scene like this, because later on in the episode, it's all going to come to a head. All of the choices she's made with Logan all season are going to come to a head in this episode. So it was really good for them, Diane and Rob, to include a scene like this at the beginning to show us yet again how Veronica is putting up walls. She's avoiding. Yeah. She's talking about surfacey stuff when she should be talking about deeper stuff. And Logan is being a champ. Like, he's continuing to be. I mean, he seems slightly, at least slightly annoyed, but he's also just being extremely patient with her.
Yeah. This is not the Logan of old. No. he would have torn into her. This would have become a big thing, you know, dramatic. Yeah. He expresses that he's not happy, that he feels like, hey, I had to wait 45 minutes for a call. And, you know, also you've been doing this with me long enough to know that I can't tell you when I'm going to be able to call you.
Right.
So take it as it is. That's part of the deal. Why are you complaining about that now? So she's, again, being kind of immature in a sense, right? And kind of avoiding what's the real situation. We do learn a little bit about Wallace, that he's going to become the basketball coach for the rival high school now.
That's right. And it's called Kane High.
Yeah.
Kane which High. I wouldn't want to tell Veronica that either. Yeah.
So this is a cool scene. A lot's happening. Then we see a cut kind of interspersed, because this is like part of the cold open. Yeah. We see that the cartel guys are outside, Alonzo and Doty, and they have a little talk about basically that they're going to kill her. They're going to we should just take them out, is what Doty says. Yeah. But Alonzo kind of wants to watch what's going on. He's obviously the smarter of the two, where that's the way they're playing these two here. And I like to see them again, too. They're good. They're fun.
Yeah, and they also mix in the natural humor of Doty being concerned that her car is parked on the wrong side of the street. and so there's also like human, a lot really interesting human qualities to these two violent hitmen. They're really great.
They should have their own webisodes.
They should.
So Veronica and Wallace, Wallace tags along with her before their movie to a Murderheads meeting. And they kind of do a little plot laying out here too, talking about Big Dick and Clyde and the possibilities of who did the bombing and what they can find out, and what they found out also about
the three.
Oh, what's that?
They're primarily talking about the three frat boys.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
She had them do deep history on,
which is still interesting to me. That's why I was kind of mentioning it at the end. They do talk about a lot about them. What is up with these cases? Are these red herrings?
I don't think so. I think whoever the primary bomber turns out to be, it is somehow connected to the thing that happened last year at the brew house, and the thing that happened three seasons ago at the frat house, where the kid quote unquote killed himself. So it's somehow connected to that. And I just can't wrap my head around how it's connected to it, but you don't bring this up in the penultimate episode of the season unless it's somehow connected to the bigger mystery.
Yeah. I agree. But this is really the only time in this episode that they get into this.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. They're doing a great job of hiding stuff a little bit more too, right? Like not giving us so many clues. And I like that, because you're right. In a sense, it has to be something with them. This can't be just a big red herring. But then all of a sudden, I think, I don't know, this could, I'm also almost, I feel like, in denial that there's only one episode left.
Right.
So I keep on thinking like, oh, maybe the second half of the season will be about this. And I'm like, right. Wait a second, there's only one episode left. So you're right. Of course, it has to be. They have to wrap into there. But we also find out that Clark Duke is like talking to Nancy Pelosi, and he's some great like economist or something.
Yeah, he's like the foremost expert on world economy. Yeah.
So
he can go to a meeting dressed in pajamas because he's that important.
I like that, because you know what? The thing is that these weird things like that could be true, man. You know, like the internet is just a crazy place. Yeah. And you meet some people in a chat group, and then it turns out that one of them is some. But they could also, is that, I want to bring up a crazy conspiracy theory, and perhaps for next season, will this play into Maloof in some way?
Interesting.
Like
that's great.
Right? Like, because also Clark Duke, I love that guy's a great actor. He is a bit well known too, you know, like I think when you cast him, people recognize him. He's been in a lot of like geeky stuff. So that would be kind of cool if he ends up on the show and they connect it to Maloof and it becomes a bigger plot, right? Maybe Veronica goes to DC. All right, I'm going crazy. We got another movie.
Well, no, because Veronica Mars has a history of like a character that appeared in episode 4 of season 1 reappears in season 3 in like episode 7, and then they expand on the history of that character 2 seasons later. So Veronica Mars has a long history of a self-contained universe where you never know if you're going to see the last of a character because Rob and Diane keep bringing them back.
That is true. And you can kind of put people in categories, right? Like what they have in common, right? How they're linked, and that is now a link that exists to kind of DC, and you also have Leo and FBI. So yeah. I'm already laying out season 5, baby.
I'm ready for it.
Why not? Yeah. Go and shoot it. It's 8 episodes.
So then, of course, there's another great. We've gotten a string of them all season. Great spitballing session between Keith and Veronica at the detective office where they're just shooting ideas off each other. It's funny. It's intellectual. There's such chemistry between the two characters, the two actors, between the father and daughter. But during this session, Veronica admits that she's feeling guilty, feeling bad about having bugged Nicole's office, because one of the things that happens in the scene is that she's been listening to, you know, the surveillance, to the recordings that have come off of the bug.
Yeah. And this is interesting too, because right after this scene, she goes and she admits to Nicole that she bugged her office. And I like the way that they've taken the time for this during this season to develop like a friendship with Veronica, and even, Keith kids with her and says, whatever you call a female bromance. Oh, a friendship. Right. Which is so funny. It's like men need to have like a safe term to be friends. You know what I mean? That's like that kind of that's like in some way jokey and teenagey and very immature, right? Like bromance. You can't just be friends with a guy. I thought that was great, because that was actually a quick joke that is kind of very enlightening, you know, like this show just kind of hits you with something like that. It really, after that joke, I actually stopped the TV and I was thinking about it. I was like, that was really clever. You know, like he's right. What is a bromance is like two guys that have a friendship, but it's just that men are too immature to admit that they have feelings.
Right. Well, that's right. I mean, some of the things that are the most clever are the things that are the most true.
Yeah, that's true. But Nicole does not take this well. She reminds her, like, you know, you see how I am with forgiveness and people who cross me. And so it seems like she really just doesn't want to have anything to do with Veronica anymore. But I don't think that's going to be the end of this.
No, I don't either. But I do think it's interesting to see the other point of view of Veronica's behavior. know what I mean? Because usually when she's surveilling someone, we generally see that from her point of view. We understand why she's doing it. We understand that it has to be done. We understand it from her point of view as a detective. But in this case, we kind of see it more from Nicole's point of view as sort of, I mean, as a violation of her privacy and of their friendship. And also Nicole throws a few zingers at her. Like, you know, you felt strongly enough that I might be the bomber, that you planted a bomb, but at the same time, you still considered me a friend who you could come, you know, complain to or vent to. How low does a bar have to be for you? And that's a really important question for someone to say to her, because how does she view personal relationships? Is she ultimately able to separate the work she does from her personal relationships?
Yeah. She's always done this, right? Wallace, Mac, right? Even the relationship with her father is predicated on this job.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that I when Veronica admitted to her and felt bad about it, I was like, oh, finally. I felt really good, you know? Yeah. I felt bad because I didn't think Nicole was going to take it well. And because like the character says, I mean, she's tough and she doesn't, if she trusts someone and they deceive her, she's not going to trust them again. Yeah. But I felt great for the character of Veronica because this is what she needs to do in some sense of the world. Like, she's coming around. I mean, look, this is, like you said, the penultimate episode. And we need to see some growth, right? And through the season. And Veronica is, at this point, growing. She has the conversation with Keith, a person, obviously her father. They're going through stuff with his health issues, him wanting to quit, right? What this job means to them as people is becoming is forefront in her mind. And as a result, she admits this to Nicole, and I thought that that was a step forward for her. And I was really happy to see that because she needs to have that honesty. And I mean, and look, and this is only two scenes after she totally changes her plan with Wallace again to drag him to a murderhead meeting. Right. So it's like she can't stop.
Right. It's like one step forward, 10 steps back. Next, we get a very we casually learn that Maddie is, in fact, not living with Veronica. She's still at the hotel because Maddie's mom calls and Veronica has to cover. And then Veronica ends up going to the hotel to tell Maddie to pick up her phone because she's been turning it off to save energy because the hotel still has no electricity. But one of the things I thought that was interesting about this scene is that Veronica thinks, ultimately, she thinks it's okay for a 16-year-old girl to live at a bombed-out, abandoned hotel by herself and to lie to her mom about it.
Yeah.
So because of the way Veronica grew up, it's just interesting how she views situations like this. So I thought that was interesting right off the bat.
Well, it is, because the funny thing is, it's like Veronica was forced to be an adult at that young age.
Yeah.
And she formed this idea, most adults aren't any more responsible than teenagers. Yeah. And she never let go of that idea. And she sees Maddie as, okay, she just sees what she's been through, right? Sees that she's doing her thing. And okay, that's fine. So it is just like a different world. It makes you think about whether or not that's healthy. But I guess in the kind of world that Veronica lives in, that's the only way she can kind of keep on going, right? Is for that kind of dichotomy to exist, that she lives in a world where children are forced to be adults. So she accepts that. When in fact, it's pretty sad. And you're also thinking, like, wait, Maddie had like a stepmom who seemed to be trying, or somebody that we saw in that first initial scene at the house, right?
Yeah.
And then it doesn't seem like her mom, I mean, her mom goes away, like, come back and get the kid, you know? I know this may be a plot contrivance so we get more Maddie, and we don't have to deal with the adults, but she is kind of on her own. So I think Veronica just empathizes with her, but it really is very interesting. Maddie plays a really interesting role this season, and they haven't been pushing it. You know, they pushed a little bit an episode or two ago. You're my protege, but it's not like she immediately is by her side 24/7.
Right. She's not like a kid sidekick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like Batman and Robin. And because that would definitely be hitting us over the head.
Yeah, it's interesting because I thought maybe that's what we were going to get.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a little bit more. But Veronica does find one of the nails, which leads us to the greatest kind of revelation of this episode. And she starts to form this theory.
As is often the case in this show, the most casual things sometimes lead to the most important revelations.
So she's basically trying to figure out, okay, these nails were present at every bombing except for the seaside and when Perry was killed.
Yeah.
Well, we know he was killed, but in her case, he killed himself, blew himself up.
Right.
Which is interesting, because when I'm watching this too, I'm saying to myself, this has been going on for so long. Like, that's why they were following Clyde, right? Like, she was tracking that down.
Yeah.
So they've kept this going until revealing this, or having Veronica notice it, till the penultimate episode. So I thought that was pretty cool. Then we have Veronica takes this notion and she decides to work it out with Leo.
Yes.
I like that. And things do get a little bit spicy too, a little bit, maybe a little rendezvous. Is it a date? Who are we going over your house? Big Lebowski. I like it.
Yeah. There's it's like playing with fire. And then suddenly you're like, no, I don't want to get burned. No.
Well, there's an attraction here. And I do think Leo is the man, but it is interesting that they have such an easy relationship that she chooses to kind of work this theory out with him.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that. And he is always open to her, which I think is cool too. And they eat too, right? She brings him something to eat, I think.
Yeah, she brings him a cinnamon roll this time. Yeah. And he confirms that the nails were not part of the two original bombings, the one at the Sea Spray, the one that ended up killing Perry. Nails were not at either scene or in either bomb, but that they were in the next three bombs. So he confirms that for her. And then like you were saying, they have a really kind of flirty conversation about the Big Lebowski and about whether or not she invited him to come over and watch it, to like Big Lebowski and chill, as the kids say.
Yeah.
But here's what I want to ask you. She has a really interesting about face, like 3/4 of the way through the conversation, where suddenly she's like, oh no, that's not what I meant. Oh no, I never invited you. And I don't know where, like, almost like, I don't know where you got this notion from. It's obviously like she protests too much, right? Like she was just like, she was trying to shut it down.
Yeah. Definitely. Because, you know, it's different, I think. I think for Leo, he feels he can kind of flirt. And even with the interesting standoff he had with Logan previously, there's a kind of gamesmanship to it.
Yeah.
And I think that it became real for Veronica and she was feeling it. And then she all of a sudden remembered that she has Logan. That's what I hope happened.
Well, in the moment, in the moment, I thought that sometimes it's the impulse when you're in something difficult to pursue something easy.
True. That's true. Like, that's true.
As like a distraction, yeah. As a welcome distraction from the thing that you find very difficult and challenging.
That is an interesting way of looking at it. Almost as if you're like, she's playing along with it and then she realizes it's getting real. But then it's kind of like, wow, this isn't right for him or Logan or me.
Right.
Like she kind of gets it. Whereas he, because he's not involved in a relationship, right?
Yeah.
Feels more free to go there.
Yes.
Which I think is natural when you have one person who's single and another person who's not and they're flirting. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is the job in this sense too. She was good, right? She was actually, I think earlier she was being more flirtatious with him, especially at the house with the wind blowing and all, you know,
right.
And kind of leaving it open. And this is, she's like telling him no. And I think that was, you know, she's growing here, right? Or she's at least trying to kind of act a little bit more responsible, which I think is a good sign from her.
You're right. But having said all of that, there is obviously undeniable chemistry
between
the two characters, the two actors. They obviously get along very well. The chemistry is palpable. Like it leaps off the screen.
They really do. Don't they though? Ken, they do. They have I think that they have always had the best chemistry together. And I think it comes from Leo being so playful and turning Veronica's seriousness on her, you know, because a lot of the other men that she's been paired with have been kind of like, even, well, I guess they tried it with Piz, but he's so blah that it just, whatever, you know?
But Duncan and Logan, for sure, but Duncan and Logan were both broody.
Yes.
And
they couldn't have the ability to do that. Even with his many jokes, it was sarcasm. With Leo, it's light and funny, and he's like, well, you know, whatever, you know? And I think that works so well but you know, I love them. But we get, let's keep it moving. Big Dick and Clyde are talking. This is a great scene because just like what we talked about, we really don't we know the history, the tattoo, how Clyde set it up, blah, blah, blah. But we really don't know their relationship, you know? And in this scene here, I think Big Dick is showing it. And he is showing that he's the alpha over Clyde. And that's what this scene to me was really about.
You know, I took it, this is interesting. I took it a completely different way. I took it as petulant child, a barely tolerant parent.
Interesting.
Like, so I took Clyde as a barely tolerant parent, and Big Dick as the petulant child testing his boundaries with a strict parent, seeing what he could get away with, and Clyde not playing all his cards, and Clyde going, okay, mister, you do that, you, like, in his head going, you'll find out what happens, so that's how I took it. Like,
well,
that,
you're right.
I still sort of lean that ultimately the power resides with Clyde, but that Big Dick is definitely feeling it. Like, he's feeling like
he can
test the boundaries and like act out a little. And, you know, oh, did we talk about that? Oh, what was our deal? Like kind of be a kid like that.
You're right, Kenny. Cause it's, you know what? You're right. Cause it really is the same situation as it was in the prison.
Yeah.
Where Big Dick thinks that Clyde is something that he's not, that thinks that he's, you know, in the prison situation, he thought that he was helping him when he had set the whole situation up to make him feel that way. And in this case, it's like Clyde is kind of setting the situation up to make Big Dick feel like he's the big guy. He feels like he's the big guy, but then Clyde's kind of like, maybe this ain't working out. You know, like,
that's a great point, because by the end of the scene, you could sort of see the wheels turning in Clyde's head, where he's like, maybe this guy is too much of a loose cannon. Yeah. He's so much of a toddler. Maybe I really can't no matter what I do behind the scenes, maybe I really can't control him and something else has to be done.
Yep. And some, as we should see, something will be done.
Absolutely.
Something's happening at the detective office. Veronica and Keith are basically, now we get this scene here where they lay out, Veronica lays out to Keith what they learn, and we get a good scene here where we now have the information. Okay, these nails weren't present with everything but Perry and Seaside. Let's say Big Dick and Clyde did Seaside. Who did the other ones? It was Penn. They formulate a theory that Penn, that the nail... Can you explain this better to me? He got the nail in his back not from... What was the what theory do they lay out here? Because it's like, I didn't quite understand. I understood in the end that it's him and that he did it, but that he got the nail at a different bombing, she's saying? Because they weren't used at those bombings, so it must have been at a different one.
Yeah, so he got the nail in his back from the bombing of the Sea Spray. So the case is that since that was not public knowledge between the second and third bombings, that if nails were in the third bomb, Penn would have had to have included them because he would have been the only civilian who would have known or assumed that nails were used in the original bombings because he had one in his back. So the theory is that because a nail ended up in, or maybe multiple nails ended up in Penn's back, that he assumed that they were used in the bombs and then used them in the third, fourth, and fifth bombs. So he copycatted wrong.
But where did the nail come from that's in his back?
It came from the string art that was partially destroyed.
That's right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Man, they got me. Okay. Now I get it. Thank you.
Because that's what Veronica looked at when she was talking to Maddie. Right. She looked at the partially destroyed string art painting and she saw the nails sticking up from it. She pulled one out and saw that it looked exactly like the nails that had been used in the bombings and the nail that had been pulled out of Penn's back. So okay. That's how she made the connection.
So if Penn, if that's the link there, is there who else could have made that? That's the thing here is that I'll only say for this episode is that Veronica and Keith go right to Penn and are convinced that it's him without thinking anything differently. And that was my only issue that I had with the laying out of this part here. Is now you, and I think they did explain that because she talked about the art that was there, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that it's linked to him only because it was in his back, and then this is why he would then want to use it in all these other bombings. I just never felt, I don't know. I didn't buy that Penn did it.
I don't either. Especially since they can't come up with any more of a motive.
Yeah, that's other it. It seemed like really, could you explain it? Like, am I missing something or seems pretty loose?
It does seem circumstantial. Like their working theory is that he did it because he wanted to quote unquote feel important.
Yeah.
Which seems like a very vague motive. And later on, let's just jump ahead a little in this storyline. Later on, the police raid his house and they find a bunch of bomb making directions laying in his printer, which also is like, if you really are the bomber, would you just leave evidence like that laying around? Like, seriously?
And what he said is true. He was investigating it. They knew that already.
They did. And he's not on the lam. He, like, later on, I'm jumping ahead just a little, but we'll definitely go back to this. He's not on the lam. He's enjoying nerd sex with his girlfriend at her cabin, which just happens to be out of town.
I totally agree. I felt like this scene was good. They laid it all out. And then when they get to the pen part, I was just like, that's so circumstantial. And Veronica and Keith kind of have it out for this guy. But the scene before they were tasking him with him in that office, Veronica was tasking him with investigating the fraternity people, which he actually went ahead and did, as we found out with the scene with Wallace and her, right?
Yeah.
So he followed through with that. And it seemed like he was kind of keeping with everything. So, and he was happy with his lady. So it just seemed to me that with all the growth that we're having with Veronica, the thing with Nicole, right?
Yeah.
The thing with Keith, that she's making a mistake here.
Well, there could be other emotional reasons why both Veronica and Keith need for this to be over.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and more so for Keith. Like, I really feel like more and more he's thinking of this. And later on, he even says it outright. This is his final case.
Yep.
And he's really like, retirement, retirement, retirement. So that would be why he would want this to be over. And maybe even be inclined to, like, shut the book too early. Veronica might have different motivations for needing this to be over, but I think she also needs this to be over too. So the idea that Big Dick and maybe Clyde did the first two bombings from their point of view, and that Penn Eppner did the other three, and that quote unquote case closed, you're right. They definitely run with it. And they definitely don't leave any room for, like, are we right about this? Is there something we're missing?
Yeah.
It seems circumstantial, but we're going to go with it anyway. They definitely are, like, full steam ahead.
And they abandon they abandon what we had seen previously, the whole investigation that we're talking about that we think is going to be connected, the fraternity and the bar. And you know what I'm saying? They're abandoning these things to get this quick result from the case. And I think that this is, like, connected to, like, when Keith kind of wanted the Maloof thing to be over with.
Yeah.
You know, like, there is the theme here running through this season of the kind of the personal really is getting in the way here. Taking a little break from our Veronica Mars discussion to remind you to go to our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com, baby. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR and use code DVR20. Get 20% off your order, no minimum. That's right, baby. It's all there for the taking. If you like NCAA, NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Marvel, DC, they've got everything. Hey, man, they got new stuff for the Aladdin movie. It's amazing stuff. Check it out. Cufflinks.com has everything along with those classic styles that just look good. They're not all genre stuff. They've got the classic stuff, too. So go to cufflinks.com/DVR and use code DVR20 today. You know, and then we see it with the next scene here, which, woo boy, talk about the sex scene. This was something else. Veronica and Leo getting down.
I thought, well, first of all, I thought, am I watching Skinamax? That was the first thing. I thought I had stumbled onto like a midnight showing on Skinamax, like when you're channel surfing and suddenly you're like, oh my God, what's going on here?
Dude, he was like Jon Snow. He went downtown. They were just like, they were like very, we are showing this to you. This is where he's going.
Like, It felt very NC-17, even though they really didn't show anything. But it was a well-shot sequence because you felt like you were seeing more than you really were, which is one of the definitions of a well-shot sequence, especially where sex is involved and nakedness is involved. You always want to feel like you saw more than you did just to, like, help the actors. But yes. And then the other thing I thought is I thought it was real. Like,
I did not think this was real.
I bought it. Like, okay. They got me. And so I was mad. I know.
So what did you
mad.
Think when Wallace showed up? Were you like, whoa, this is getting kicky?
Well, when Wallace showed up, I knew it was a dream. But up until then, I thought it was real. And I was so mad at Veronica. I'm like, oh my God, are you seriously doing this to poor Logan? I'm like, oh my God. That's well, hilarious. I know Axel's happy. I know he's like eating the popcorn and like, yes.
I think it's wonderful that you have an actress who's been with us for so long since she was younger. We know her in the public realm, right? She's married, Dax Shepard. She has kids, right? She's a mom, yeah. But she comes back to this show and is a, you know, she's milfing it out. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how else to say it. You know what I mean? Like, she's just owning her sexuality and being really super hot at an older age, and as an older guy too, I kind of feel like you go, you know what I mean? Like, I think that that's cool that they can find this in the character when she's older, because so much of our society here, we're talking about, you know, walking a tight line that Rob did, but then look around now, and I'm mentioning like Euphoria. It's like every kid show is like, let's show how we can have how sexual kids can be.
Right.
Right. Like, that's right. America. Yeah. So I think it's great that they're showing it a more mature woman be sexual and feel this at an older age, even after she's been through a life. And we as an audience know too, who she is as a actress returning to this role. So I just think it's kind of cool because you could have, you know, us saying, they're on the streaming service, so they're going HBO Game of Thrones style, you know, throwing in the sex and violence. But I totally don't feel that way. I feel like it's natural and beautiful and really awesome. And I hope somebody's out there writing a think piece about, you know, the sexuality of Veronica Mars in this season, because I think it's really cool.
I couldn't say it any better, so I won't. The only thing I'll add is at the end of the scene, when she wakes up and we get confirmation that it was a dream, even though Wallace's appearance pretty much pointed to the fact that it was a dream. unless things got super kinky.
Yeah, which they could.
Mars, season, which they could.
Season right. five.
Season five, it's like a sex dungeon the whole right? time. But when she wakes up, I thought it was in the moment, I thought it was at least slightly ambiguous what her reaction to the dream was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like that. Like, what did she regret it? Did she regret it a little, but was still sort of into it? Like, where was she in her head? And we don't know that until later in the episode. So,
yep. Mm-hmm. Or do we?
Oh, come on. Stop it already. So,
speaking of
young Veronica, though, we get kind of, I love this scene between Maddie and Big Dick when he drops off the big red convertible, because that's what girls like, to the Sea Sprite as a bribe. Says that there's a new offer in the glove compartment. And I love how she's like sassy, like kind of like Veronica Mars season one, where she's like, did you do this for Perry? Like, it's such a great kind of pithy comeback to him. One of the things I love about the scene, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about it, is Big Dick is kind of dark this season, a lot darker than seasons 1 through 3 of Big Dick.
Yeah. Prison will do that to you.
Yeah, you're right.
Right.
You're right.
I think it serves the show well too, because you have to have a foil, and he can't be, there's nothing funny about killing people accidentally or not in this case, and what he does to people's lives. So I kind of like that that he's a bit more menacing, and threatening her. And I like that she goes back at him, because then in the next scene when she shows up at the detective office and she's really pushing Veronica and Keith, it's kind of like the word is out. You know what I mean? This is like a frustrating point with the sheriff too, and it shows you like why she's annoying as well, is that like everybody knows that Clyde and Big Dick did this, right? Like Maddie's saying it. They're talking about it a little bit more so about the Frappy Butt murder head. People know about it. Penn called it out at the meeting. And I think that Maddie is just like representing, and I like the way throughout they're representing the frustrated people who have lost loved ones here. And it's like everything's kind of being ignored by, again, this system.
Right.
It's sad. You feel bad for her. Her dad got blown up, which, by the way, when I was watching this on Hulu, the guy who plays her dad is in an ad that they keep on replaying during the commercials, because I got the 99 cent for a month for a year Hulu commercials deal.
Yeah.
So her dad, as soon as I started up this episode, he's in there and it's like him with the kids and a family. And then it's like, previously on Veronica Mars, Maddie's like, my dad's dead. And I was like, wait, he was just in the commercial.
Oh, that's so distressing, but yeah. Kind of wonderful that that actor is still working though.
Yeah. Good for him. I actually, you know, what's funny is just a quick side note. I kind of like watching this with the commercials because it makes me feel like when I didn't get to watch Veronica Mars when it first aired, it kind of feels retro in a sense, but it's weird. But anyway,
that is cool actually. Cause that's, as we talked about before, when we were recapping seasons 1 through 3, that is how I watched Veronica Mars for the most part. I watched it in real time, of course, with the commercials week to week. So yeah, that is very retro in this day and age. sadly, it makes me feel very old. Thank you.
I know.
Thank you for that.
We're probably all going to go back to it anyway, right? Like everything's just going to come back to what it was in the beginning.
True. Keith comes into the detective office and where Maddie and Veronica are talking about Big Dick or he's there, but he informs them that a limerick has been delivered to the chief of police office stating that a new bomb will go off in 48 hours. Presumably the limerick is a clue about the location of the next bombing. And Keith and Veronica are on the case there. Keith says, chief of police wants to hear about our theory now, because she had kind of blown it off before. She didn't want to talk to Keith. She told her lackey to just like get rid of him. And Keith actually writes down the limerick and reads it out loud. You know, it's kind of pithy. And Veronica later quickly realizes that it's it's like a food joint where they sell sandwiches.
Yes. It's Hawaiian or something like that. The name. Yeah, I can't remember right now.
Oh no, it's Fiji.
Fiji. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It's Fiji. And the police chief says she knew that already and they're already clearing out the whole block, which is interesting because Veronica says something like, that's half a block from me. And then the police chief says, we're clearing out two blocks. So wouldn't that mean that they're going to clear out Veronica?
Yes. you would think so.
Right?
Would think that would mean that.
Maybe I misheard that, but I watched it twice. So I think that that is what happened there. But I thought that was it. But also, you know, the chief comes back. This is how she is, right? Now that their information has been can provide some insight to her. All right, fine. I'll bring you in. But it's not like she congratulates them or anything.
Right. And part of it is that she's also reacting to the sequence that has just happened minutes before, where they're on a conference call with the FBI chief, Leo's supervisor, and he's not even there. He's just he's on the phone with them, like on speakerphone. And he's basically like calling them all idiots and saying that they don't know what they're doing. And
sounds younger than any of them too.
True. And that it's some rando up in LA who must be the responsible party. Yeah. And so part of it is that I think Marcia is just like, this is part of her ambition. She's like, I want to show them up.
Exactly.
I want to show up the FBI.
Yeah, that's a great point. I wonder who that was. I have a feeling that was somebody that maybe it was Rob Thomas. Maybe it was a director. So that was somebody who played his boss. I got to research that. But I bet you Sean will know when we bring Sean on for our kind of recap of all. That will be fun, because when these little things pop up, I'm always like, oh, that has to be somebody.
I thought the same thing, and I also wondered who was playing the FBI supervisor, because it would be fun if it was like Rob or, yeah, like you said, the director or one of the producers or like Diane's husband or, you know, like it, but just someone who's involved in the show.
Oh, maybe it was Little Dick. Maybe it was, he was acting. You never know. He's an actor.
That's true.
But yeah, this is good. And Leo is frustrated and he's like, well, now, and he sends them to that secondary case that had gone on in California, right?
Yeah.
Where they thought that it was this dude because it was connected to another one of their cases. And right. Leo doesn't think it's that guy. And he says, we all don't think it's, we're going to go arrest somebody who we don't think, nobody in this room thinks did it. But then we get the cops are ready to move on Penn. They go and they raid Penn. The next scene, we jump in. The stoners are there hanging out, playing video games. They get scared. The cops are there. I was just thinking, man, what was that? What if that was me and I was sitting there playing video games? I would be pretty scared.
It was definitely a Bill and Ted moment.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah,
it was fun. But then they eventually, like you said before, they go through Penn's place. They find bomb and they find stuff that you would find if somebody who they already should have known was in the investigation. But as Marcia is, she goes along with it because it's going to go. It's going to feed into her idea now, her theory, and try to one up the FBI. It turns out that Penn, like they say, he's on the lam, but we find out later, Veronica tells Keith that he's actually at the cabin of his murderhead girlfriend. So this is all, it's interesting because again, it's this institution, right? Like the FBI won't listen. And when the cops do something, they're only doing it to forward their own ambitions, right? Or for publicity. So again, we're in this world where really the only people who are actually trying to solve this case are Veronica and Keith and kind of Leo, but Leo has to be taken away because he's an FBI agent and he's part of that institution.
Yep, absolutely. So we leave it with Marcia kind of running with it and raiding Penn's house, and then also Keith and Veronica realizing that Penn is at his girlfriend's cabin. But then we also get a series of short little scenes with Weevil.
Yeah.
The first one is him and his buddy talking, and his buddy casually tells him that information Weevil didn't know before, which is that one of the victims of the sea spray was actually related to the big cartel boss from Mexico, the boss of Alonzo and Doty. And then he hypothesizes that that's probably why they're in town, but that, what does that mean? Like, what are they doing? But you can see the wheels turning in Weevil's head with this new information.
Yeah. And it's cool that they kept this, right? Like, we knew this right away.
Yeah.
We knew that's why they were there. And we see little by little, okay, they meet Weevil's sister. Then they meet Weevil. Oh, Weevil knows what gang they're in. Yeah. Then he gets this little bit. The pieces are coming together for other people too. I like that. And it takes to the penultimate episode to find out, for him to find out. And the way Weevil's sister is so cavalier about, oh, they're, I don't like her.
I don't like her either. I don't like her. Like, she's like, talking like,
yeah,
like, oh, like she, like something completely unimportant. Like, I don't know what, but not that someone's about to be killed, even if it's someone you don't particularly like, still someone's about to be killed. Yeah. And she's just like cavalierly like, oh yeah, you don't have to worry about her anymore.
And it's just, it's also for us, it's like scary to hear that they're, I mean, we kind of heard this, that Doty had said that. But yeah, now with her saying it too, it's like, you know, word on the street, they're going to kill Veronica. You don't have to worry about her. And Weevil is obviously not happy about that. We've seen the tensions that erupted between Weevil and Veronica but we saw that really it was Veronica that was more angry, you know?
Yeah.
Weevil is upset at what she's doing as a result of her anger, but this is all about, this is in the family, you know? They love each other. They've been through a lot.
They're really like brother and sister.
Yeah.
And the only way that Weevil could be this hurt is if there was an equal amount of love there.
Exactly.
That would allow him to feel that hurt by her. We also see kind of classic manipulative, clever Weevil kind of throwing a fishing rod into the water with Clyde and sort of casually, quote unquote, letting him know that the cartel guys are in town to, quote unquote, find the bomber, and that whoever's responsible for the sea spray bombing should be worried, quote unquote.
Now, didn't you get the feeling that he was saying to Clyde, hey, you know, let's take out Big Dick?
He was saying something, and I'm not sure. I that's a great theory, and that could
that's
be
the sense. I mean, eventually, this is what happens.
Yeah.
But I do think that Weevil was steering him in that direction, because the way he was saying, you know, where the money's coming from, and right. and Clyde was like, "We're not going to need you anymore," and Weevil is kind of hinting like, hey, we're just the guys here, you know? Like, you're the guy giving me the money from the guy. Whatever you think you are. And I'm the guy who needs to get the money from you so I can give it to my guys. But at this point, we're guys with the money. And I don't know. I felt something. Like, when I was rewatching that scene, I was like, I think Weevil had, I don't know, there was just some kind of communication there. That it was about that system.
Well, I want you to be right, because if Weevil's making a power play here to take a bigger slice of Neptune, then I think that's really interesting.
That's what I do. That's what I think was happening. And I think that Weevil is maybe at this point, because we haven't seen him like that, right?
No, we haven't. It's comparable to when Walter White took out Gus in Breaking Bad. Because that was sort of the point where he really turned the corner and really became like a kingpin, a criminal kingpin, is when he took out his main competition to get a bigger slice of the meth pie.
Yeah.
And in this situation, it could be that Weevil is making a power play to get rid of one of the big fish in Neptune.
And also because maybe he thinks that he can have a cleaner or understanding with Clyde.
Yes.
You know that I'd rather Clyde be the man than Big Dick be the man, because they have the interest of the cars and like,
because he thinks I can work with Clyde.
Yeah, man, I'm envisioning that they're opening Clyde's old car place together, maybe doing some crimes too. But like we heard from Keith, Clyde doesn't want to hurt people, right? Like, this is the guy who robbed the bank and didn't hurt anybody. And so I think that there's like a hint here, and maybe it's just me, a hint here of Clyde and Weevil having a better relationship, and Clyde sensing it, Weevil sensing it, and the connection with the cars and everything. So I've got them in a different webisode too. but we get the kind of penultimate action sequence of the season here, where Veronica and first we start with Penn and his girl dancing, and it's very sweet. And as you said, Ken, they do not seem like they're hiding out
right
from anyone. They just seem like they're having a romantic little time away, a little nerd heaven. at this beautiful cabin. I like how it's like a cabin in the woods.
Yes.
And Veronica and Keith are showing up. They kind of, you know, they gum in there, they're surprised, but before they can really get to anything here with Penn and the girl, the cartel guys show up and start shooting it up. And I got scared that Keith was going to die.
I got scared that someone was going to die, and like you, I feared it was going to be Keith, but the hitmen have shown us all season that they take their jobs very seriously, and that once they think they've gotten to a place of their objective, that they have zero problem with executing that objective. And in this case, their only goal in keeping Veronica and Keith alive at all was so that they could lead them to the quote unquote bomber. And once they led them to Penn, then as far as they were concerned, mission accomplished. So they were going to kill all four of them and not think twice about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's scary.
It was scary. And it was also emotional, because even before they could fully explore it, which they will in upcoming scenes, Keith admits that he forgot something. He forgot to load his gun. And so in the middle of this fight sequence, which is very scary, very violent, bullets are flying, Keith says, "I forgot to do something." And we know as an audience what that means. And so then Keith takes it upon himself to go out the back door, go to the car, try to get to the extra bullets so that he can load his gun. And so it's also emotional, because Keith's health condition has been emotional all season.
Yes, that was, man, this scene got me, man. Throwing in the thing with him forgetting, especially. You know what
I'm sorry. You know what it reminded me of? It kind of reminded me of the Aaron Eccles thing at the end of season one.
Yes.
Because Keith was there. Veronica was there. The bad guy was there. And Veronica was very she seemed super vulnerable and scared in this scene, kind of like she did in the Aaron Eccles sequence at the end of season one. And it kind of reminded me of that sequence a little bit.
But she took more charge in this one.
She did.
And you're right. She was. And I like the way that they were scared, because what kind of annoys me a lot of times, whenever I've talked to a police officer or someone who's been in the military or something, who actually has been in some sort of gunfight, they're always like, "Of course you're scared. There's bullets flying around. You know, it's really scary." And yeah. The way that they're reacting emotionally to it, and the way that Penn and his girl, they're just running out, what the hell would anybody do? This isn't superhero time. So I like that. I thought they were going to get shot. They mixed the Keith stuff in. And as you had mentioned earlier, where Keith wrote down the limerick, they were really hammering that home this episode, you know, with him. Remember in the police station too, they say, the sheriff says, "Keith, don't you remember when the Maloofs and those guys were fighting in the hallway? Don't you remember that?" Veronica looks at him. So for this to lead up to this, exactly what Keith was talking about, that I could put us in danger because I forgot something, is devastating. But also, in a sense, anybody could have forgotten it. That is the hard thing about traumatic brain injuries or memory loss, dementia, things of this nature, is that it's true. We all forget things, but this is a pattern. This is going to happen again. It's not like later Veronica tries to say, "But Dad, I've forgotten things." No, this is really bad. Because he could have gotten them killed, because Alonzo and Dodie cut off some kid's head without even thinking about it.
They sure did. And they were going to cut off their heads too. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. And the way that Veronica was running around at the window trying to shoot them before they could get to Keith, man, that was
I totally agree with you. I appreciate the level of desperation and fear that all characters displayed, because that seems real.
Yeah. That was great. That was awesome. And then, of course, we have, in classic Veronica Mars, Weevil shows up. You hear the motorcycles. Yeah. Didn't you? I mean, you immediately knew who it was.
I smiled from ear to ear as soon as I heard the motorcycles, because not only did it mean that they were safe, but like you just mentioned, it's a callback to multiple other instances where Weevil has saved her. Yeah. Literally saved her life. And so it was also a callback to other things that have happened in past seasons. And it just made me smile, because their relationship is super complicated, super deep, super rich, super rewarding, and super interesting. And so that look that they give each other when Dodie and Alonzo take off, and he's like, not tonight, boys. She's safe. Nothing's going to happen to her. And then, like when she's standing on the porch looking down at him on the motorcycle, the look they give each other, great acting. Yeah. Great acting.
And it's also another power play here from Weevil. This episode could be called The Rise of the Weevil, baby. Because he's making power plays with Clyde. And then this is a power play, too, because those guys are connected to a very strong cartel. True. So, you know, he's going to have to figure that out. So he's risking himself. And it is the story of Weevil, right? Though he and Veronica, and it's in a sense, it's like Veronica, where her job and what she gets involved with costs the personal relationships. She is, in a sense, forcing Weevil to go deeper into this world again because of her involvement in this. And by him saving her, he's putting himself out on a limb. And with the Clyde thing, which also involved Veronica, right?
Yeah.
She's pushing her towards that too. So it's very complicated. And, but it was awesome when those motorcycles came through. That's really cool.
I could finally exhale when I heard the motorcycle. They got me. I was like, oh my God, they're all going to die. So then we go right to the police station, and there's the procedural thing where, you know, they're booking Penn and they're bringing him in, and he's like, I'm not guilty. And he's like shouting over his shoulder as they're like pushing him down a hallway. And so that's sort of, we'll get a lot more of that in a few minutes, but the heart of this sequence is two things. Leo sort of says goodbye to Veronica, consoles her / says goodbye to her because he's leaving the next morning now that Penn has been brought in. So let's talk about that first, because then something else happens. But the Leo Veronica thing, like, once again, she sort of like, she plays it cool. He plays it not as cool as her, but he's also like, you know, it's just an emotionally kind of charged scene once again, because I think they both realize what could have happened.
Oh, what will happen? He'll be back. The love will never die. No, it wasn't the end. Yeah, it was sad, but you know what? They've had their goodbyes before. Leo will be back. That's how I feel.
That's probably true. But I did think it was interesting how she was like, he apologizes for inviting himself. She says, I never gave it a second thought. Right. Right. Except for that hot dream I had.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's good. And then he watches her walk away with sort of like a wistful look on his face. But then, of course, the heart of the scene is Veronica goes up to Keith, who's standing in front of a concession machine. And boy, I watched this episode 4 times. Every single time this scene made me cry. The first time it made me cry almost like a little girl, like I was blubbering. And then the other 3 times it just made me cry. But like real cry, like tears coming down my cheeks, like my mascara was running. She tries to make him feel better about the fact that he forgot to load his gun. And he tells her that this is what he was afraid of, just like you said a few minutes ago, and that he quits. He's done. And the acting of Enrico here playing Keith, his desperate, quiet resignation.
Yeah. He can barely even look at her.
He can't even look at her.
And he blames it on the snacks, but it's not about the snacks. And yeah, this was sad. This was sad. But I felt this scene was sad, but it also made me a little happy because I felt like, okay, he's going to be safe. You know, like, honestly, I really felt like this was the right choice. And this is what he has to do. I still don't get why he can't just like stay at the office a little bit, you know? But it's because he doesn't want Veronica doing this work. And that goes back to when she came back from New York and the movie.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I think that is kind of lost there, that in between. And maybe it's also because he just needs to have an absolute release from the stress of this, because he knows he can't help but get involved, which is what kind of happens here. And Veronica brings him in too. So I think more so in a sense, you know, he has to deal with this. It's really about Keith. Yeah. And what he's losing. And yes, it is about Veronica, and it's very hard for her. But for he himself, he kind of, I think that's why he's saying to her, like, you know, let me deal with this in a sense. Let me work through this, because I do think it's the right choice.
Yeah. And it's the healthy choice. It's like what needs to be done. She does walk away from him. He asks her to walk away from him. She does. She goes home, surprised after she walks in the front door to realize that Logan is home.
Surprise!
Surprise! And for the first time all season, she lets down all her guard. Totally. She runs into his arms. She lets him be there for her. She makes it clear to him that she's had a day, which she has, and she lets him be the person in her life. And she also asks him if he still has the ring. And he says, yes, I do. He says, I do. And then she says, oh, you know your lines already.
This is, I don't know. What did you, I wanted to be happy about this, Ken. But after everything that happened in this episode, it just seems kind of quick to me. I think that Veronica is realizing what's important to her.
Yeah.
You know, and with losing, you know, the thing that happens with Nicole and now losing Keith, and then she's kind of grasping at Logan. She's crying before she even gets into his arms. She, you're right. She just totally lets it go, and he has been there for her. But I don't know. I just feel like I can't trust her at this point, because I think that she's so deep in her feelings, as they say, that maybe she's not thinking straight. But
What's great is, unlike her father has always treated this like a job. A job that he's passionate about, a job that he wants to do well, but a job. For Veronica, it was never just a job. It was personal. Like, the thing that made her want to really be a detective was the fact that she was raped. She wanted to find out who did that to her. She also wanted to find out who took her best friend / sister away from her, who murdered her. And so, and like, what happened to her mother? Why did her mother walk away from them? So for Veronica, mystery has always been deeply personal. Solving the mystery has always been deeply personal. And so in that sense, her career will never be easy. Her career will never be healthy. Her career will always be an obsession. So I think the tension is, can Veronica have a personal life that's recognizable, a recognizable personal life, while still doing this job?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the ultimate question.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate question. But now, for now, it seems the wedding bells are ringing.
And I for a moment was blissful.
Well, you know what? It was good to see Logan get that from Veronica. And he was obviously elated, and I thought it was a great little scene. It didn't go on too long.
No.
You know, because we got to keep it moving. We got bombs and stuff happening. But I was happy for Logan, but still, I got to say, I don't know. I'm feeling like, you know, whenever you get that kind of temptation from the ex, the family stuff happening, and then you make a big step in a relationship, it's always kind of like, well, hold the brakes here a little bit. And maybe I'm interested to see in the next episode, kind of she and Logan talk it out, if it still stands past a talk.
Yeah, because she's kind of a yo-yo right now.
Yes, exactly. That's why I'm saying I don't trust. That's a good way to say it. I should have just said that. She's yo-yoing. It's exactly what's happening.
We get – it's like one great scene after another. We get another great scene when Clyde walks into Keith's office the next morning. It's just two great actors sitting across the desk from each other, reciting great dialogue, giving hell of a performances, and it's just a great scene.
And Keith, too. Keith is done now. I like this. You know, I mean, look, I don't know what's happening with Veronica, but I think Keith has made a decision here. It seems that Keith has made that decision just to live free now, you know, and why continue these games with Clyde? I think Maddie would be happy. He could have done this before. And the interesting thing is that Clyde, you know, he doesn't exactly threaten Keith. He says, you know, watch who you're, you know what game you're getting into, or something along those lines. But it's almost as if Clyde respects it.
Well, that's the beauty of this scene. It's not only, you know, a detective calling out a criminal, but there's some real authentic positive feelings between these two men. Like, they really did enjoy each other's company. So the idea that that it's now turned a corner is a little bittersweet, probably for both of them.
Yeah, definitely. And it's gonna get more than that, because it gives Clyde an idea. Meeting with Weevil and then the meeting with Keith, it's really interesting, the character of Clyde, because you think he could turn it on Weevil, but no, he kind of learns from it, right? You think he could turn it on Keith or react in a crazy way? No, he kind of gets the signal here, and the signal is screw Big Dick, because this is the guy who caused this problems to begin with.
Yes.
So it ends up that Clyde wants it. He calls Weevil. I want a meeting. Weevil sets up a meeting with the cartel guys and Clyde. But the interesting thing here is there doesn't seem to be any backdraft here, any problems for Weevil with the cartel guys. They kind of respected. We didn't get a scene here that explained to us where their standing is after Weevil had run them off from killing Veronica.
Right.
So that was a little bit of a question here, but we'll let that go for now. But we do see that we get a little nice, I like the way they set this up. We get a flashback to what we saw before, and we see that Clyde was taping Big Dick. And this is kind of the reason why we got that extended monologue of explaining how the bombing went wrong and all that.
Well, you and I speculated at the time that one of them was recording the other. Yep. We just didn't know who was recording who, because it seemed weird that both of them were sort of asking the questions that they were asking. Exactly.
Yes. It did seem, you're absolutely right, Ken. It was, and it makes sense. Now it makes sense, because that was an awkward scene, because it was like too much exposition, but now we know why. So basically Clyde has now, the cartel guys are tasked finally with getting the guy who did the bombing, the correct guy. It's Big Dick. So in a way, justice is kind of served.
It is. I mean, especially for the sea spray, because whether Big Dick intended for that bomb to go off, he is actually the person responsible for there being a bomb there in the lobby. So whether he actually is the one who turned off the internet and fracked up the timer on the bomb, we still don't know the details of that. But we do know that Big Dick is the person who's responsible for the fact that there was a bomb there at all.
Yeah. And I think Clyde had said that he didn't want to bomb anybody. Right. Aren't we to believe that Clyde was more down with the idea of using Weevil and the spray painting kids and all that, and it was Big Dick who needed to accelerate this.
Exactly. You're absolutely remembering that correctly. Clyde was surprised that Big Dick escalated. And Big yeah. Dick had said that his original intention was to set off the bomb at a time when he knew no one would be in the lobby as part of an escalation of the scare campaign.
Famous last words of someone trying to bomb a hotel.
Right. Oh.
No, we shouldn't joke about that. But it's like, right, that's always like, oh, we'll do it once, you know, we're going to do something when no one will get hurt. Always in a TV show or movie, guess what? Somebody's going to get hurt.
It's like Chekhov's bomb.
Yeah,
it's
your Chekhov's son's bomb. An actor. You should have known.
That's correct.
What's going on? So we get that, and which is interesting because we're going to see what happens there, but also for the fact of, like I said, I'm still interested in what's going on with Weevil and the cartel. But now we go back to the police station. Penn's getting interrogated. Who's his lawyer? Of course, our famous friend, Cliff, turns up as his lawyer. And now Penn wants to see Veronica and Keith.
Can I ask you a quick question? Has there ever in the history of Hollywood been a good scummy lawyer?
I don't know. Well, you know what? There's a show on Amazon called Goliath.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen it. And it's a pretty decent show, actually. I like it. And Cliff reminds me of that character. Like, he could kind of fit in that world. Who's the guy who stars in Goliath? It's the guy from Sling Blade.
Billy Bob Thornton.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Billy Bob Thornton is in it. And you know what? Cliff could show up on that show.
Because he is both truly scummy and also a totally good guy.
Yeah. Well, there's probably a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
You know, this is America.
So it's the land of opportunity.
Yeah, we kind of traffic in that. Okay. But we do get a very interesting scene as Veronica visits the Maloofs to get their final check, which is probably going to be a lot less than it should be.
Right.
And she hears something interesting, which is I was trying to figure out, why is this scene here, right? Yeah. Well, we get to see a little pickup of Maloof is alive. He's in the hospital. He's still feeling bad about it. He's kind of like, it sounds like he wants to tell Veronica, I did something very bad.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe he's talking too much, but mommy's like, be quiet. But we hear that he's going to run for Senate over a phone call, right? Or no, she's talking to someone there.
Yeah. And that his now that there's been an assassination attempt, that his candidacy would be like a shoo-in.
Yes,
like
he's a white supremacist tried to kill him.
Right.
So it just also shows the kind of institutional thing. But then again, I do think it's playing into like a separate thing that they could be kind of building up here, right? I like that. I like how they do that. Like you said, they come back in.
They definitely left it at that we have not seen the end of the Maloofs.
Yes.
For sure.
Yep.
For sure, we haven't seen the end of them.
And Veronica gets her check made out to
wrote Mars Detectives instead of Mars Investigations.
Yes. I thought that was kind of funny. And we get a quick scene here with Big Dick and Maddie. Maddie sneaks into Big Dick's house by hiding in the trunk of the car and leaving it there for him because she knows he'll bring it back in his house.
Classic move.
And then Big Dick is driving along. I'm waiting for him to get killed.
Yeah, me too.
Right? I saw when he picks up his phone, I thought a car was going to kill him and it was going to be the cartel guys that were going to shoot him. But no, he sees through a security camera that Maddie's there. He turns around and that's the last we see.
For now, like that kind of ends in a cliffhanger. Like, is what's Big Dick going to do to Maddie? Are the cartel guys going to get there first? Like, is Maddie going to be caught in the crossfire? That's a big cliffhanger.
Definitely. Yeah. They've got all this intersection happening. And at the same time, Veronica and Keith agree and they go and they meet with Cliff and Penn at the police station. And Penn asked to hire them. They're like, what? We're the ones who put you here. Right. And Penn, though, kind of like in OJ style, we got to find the real killer, is like, no, I want you to find the real bomber. Like, this is, I know you guys are the best. You're the closest to the case. I really want you to find the real bomber. But it ends in a weird way where it's kind of like he's threatening. It's like, you need to listen to me because a bomb's going to go off in 48 hours.
Yeah.
But it's like, did he have something more to say, or was it just a turn of phrase? What did you think? It was a weird ending for me.
It was ambiguous because in a way it almost was like he was saying by focusing on a bomb is still going to go off in, I think at this point he said 24 hours. Then by saying it that way, it's almost like he's saying, like he could be saying, yeah, I did plant that bomb and I do know where it is.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like, it's an ambiguous ending for as far as his culpability in the situation.
Yeah. It was because weird. Veronica asked him, right? She said, like, unless you have more information or know where the bomb is. And then he said, you need to listen. It was just a weird turn of phrase between the both of them.
Yeah.
You're right. Very ambiguous. Is Penn the bomber? Does he know, or does he just know where the bomb is? Does he need them because he got in too deep in something, but he's not that deep? It was just like, you never know, but I thought it was very interesting and very detective-y the way it was like, kind of like, well, who, burr, 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 they could have had a little music at the end of it and turned black and white.
Right.
Right? Like, I was like, what's going on? At this point, we're headed into the final episode where our journey is about to end until season 5.
Right.
And who do you think did it? I think we both don't think Penn did it, right? Do you think Penn did it?
I do not think
Penn did it. I don't either. I do not think Penn did it.
Big Dick is responsible for the sea spray bombing.
Definitely.
And also, ultimately, the killing of Perry, whether or not Clyde did that, it was still a direct result of the sea spray bombing and them having to cover up their tracks. So they're sort of interconnected. So they're definitely responsible for that. As to who's responsible for the next four bombings, I don't believe it's Penn. I wonder what the three frat boys and the death of their frat brother 3 summers before has to do with any of this. It's obviously interconnected. So I wonder about that too. Also, Leo had a really interesting story about Penn that he told Veronica about his time at Neptune College and what led him to being expelled from Neptune College. It involved paintball, someone losing their eye, someone literally shooting their eye out.
Supposedly his friend too.
Right. And at the expulsion hearing, they asked Penn if it was worth it that he lost, his right to go to Neptune College, and also his friend. And supposedly Penn said, well, I won, didn't I?
Yeah.
If that story is true, which supposedly Leo got the transcripts from the expulsion hearing. So I guess it is true that he said that, then that's a dark story.
It is, but it doesn't mean that he would bomb and kill. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true.
And I think that we've seen that he has. I mean, he is in a group called Murderheads. He's a dark dude. He's kind of nerdy. You never know what kind of weird reason he could have that guy did something else to him that's not on the transcript. You know, you could imagine him saying, what do you believe, a transcript, Mars? The official account, right? Like, that's what the government wants you to believe. This is what I think. I think we might be getting a 10 Little Indians. I think I said this before, where perhaps there's 3-4 bombers, right? Like maybe Penn was involved in one. The frat guys were a payback. The guy who got his head blown off was a payback from something else. They seem personal in a way. The bar was a result of something else, you know? And I think that that's where we might be headed, because we still have the thing with Nicole ended and Veronica said, oh, I don't think anything happened. But she still lied about selling the bar, and there's still little other hints of maybe she's trying to get back at someone, right? We have the frat guy. We have the guy who blew up at the bar from the beer making machine. He had a weird background too, right?
Yeah.
So I think that there's enough here to craft that we might be getting a situation where each bombing after the Sea Sprite and Perry were individually copycat. So they're not just one person picked up, but that's just my theory from right now.
My crazy theory is that it's someone else in Murderheads.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Maybe like Clark Duke isn't meeting with Nancy Pelosi.
Well, either Clark Duke, or what if it's the girl?
Oh, just to get, maybe her aim was to get Penn.
Or just to like get attention, or maybe she went to Neptune College and something bad happened to her, or, you know.
That was her brother whose eye Penn shot out, and he never knew it.
Like, I mean, I don't know I obviously don't know the details, but my weird theory is that it's someone in the Murderheads, someone else, and specifically the girl, because she's really the only other Murderhead that we've spent time with. There's an Indian dude that we've seen a little of. There's another girl that we've seen a very little of, and then there's Clyde, and then there's your boy Duke. But I don't believe it's him. I don't think that's true. So if it is another Murderhead, I would say it's the girl.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. You know, in the end, again, like with every season of Veronica Mars, I'm happy whoever it is, because I just love the characters and the show.
Yeah.
But I do say that this is probably the most tightly constructed mystery that they've done yet.
Yeah.
I understand it. I know what's happening. Yeah. I'm interested to find out who did it. And if it turns out that it's, like you said, a Murderhead, if it turns out, I'm going to believe it. I think that they've laid a lot of different clues, but I'm going to go with, I think Penn may be involved in some way though.
Yeah.
Maybe not. And that last scene is convincing me of that. Like, he got in too deep. Like, maybe he thought this will get some attention, but similar to Dick, it won't hurt anybody.
Right.
The bomb will go off here. Maybe it was the bomb that went off during the volleyball game that didn't kill anyone.
Yeah.
So I guess we shall see. We've only got one episode left.
And then, of course, hand in hand with always in Veronica Mars, in addition to the mystery, is there's a lot of emotional threads that have been building up all season. So it'll also be interesting to see like what happens with Veronica and Logan. What happens with Veronica and her father? What happens with Veronica and Weevil? What happens with Weevil and his place in Neptune? So there's other strands going on that you could say are more emotional, that also sort of need to be addressed in this next and final episode of the season. So I look forward to all of it.
Me too, buddy. Me too. This has been such a pleasure, and I've enjoyed it, and I'm going to enjoy it. And we're going to do that episode, and then we're going to do another episode with my friend Sean, who's going to come on, and he's been down with Veronica Mars since the beginning. He read all the books. He knows about everything. I think actually, I think this was a show that was it. I think he used to like write on the boards for Television Without Pity or something. I think he'll talk to us about it, but it goes deep internet stories too, but that's going to be great fun. I can't wait. I have not watched it yet. I do not know. I am totally extrapolating blind. Been going along with everybody here on the podcast. So right now we're excited. We're going to pick a date in the future. watch it, podcast on it. I can't wait to see what happens. Until then, Ken, is there, you have any final words that you want to share with us?
Thanks for going on the ride with us. It's been a hell of a ride. All I can say is I look forward to the final episode, the end of this part of the ride. I mean, I assume there's going to be a season 5. I've no doubt at this point that there will be some future for this character, this show. But I look forward to the end of this mystery.
Oh, yes. Well, Veronica is working security for Maloof in D.C. with Logan. And they're going on international adventures. We'll see in season 5. But until then, thanks everyone for listening. Peace out.